Oh my goodness. I'm so excited to bring to you my book coach and just an all over amazing human, Liz Lyons. And typically I do an official intro on her, but I just run, don't walk, go check her out. You can find her on Instagram, Elizabeth Lyons, or you can go to her website at publishaprofitablebook.com. Again, publishaprofitablebook.com. Check her out. I mean, just follow her simply for her amazing sense of humor. I absolutely love how she shows up. So I'm just going to stop talking and we're going to dive into this episode. Again, one of my favorite people, responsible for ditching the dream out to the world, responsible for helping me move through fear in big ways. And she's going to be talking about how to stay in your lane. Enjoy. Hey, welcome to another episode of Dialed In. You just heard all about my dear friend Liz in the intro. And if I didn't mention it in the intro, Liz is not only a friend of mine, but she's become a coach for me as I'm writing my book. And we were just talking about all different kinds of things prior to hitting the record button. But I think we're going to talk about living true to who you are and staying in your own lane, maybe a little bit today. So, welcome to Dialed In, Liz.
Thanks so much for having me. I always love talking to you. You know that.
Oh, it's so fun. You're one of those people for me that no matter what we talk about, I leave feeling better. So, thank you for that. You're a gift.
Oh, thank you. I feel the same way.
It's good stuff. So, before we hit record, we were talking about leaning in to truly understanding what we want to do in our lives and being like staying in our lane and not looking left and right and to stop impressing people. And can you talk about what that journey has been or maybe is for you? Isn't it ongoing?
Oh my gosh, it's so ongoing. I mean, because right before you hit record, you said, whatever happened to just staying in your own lane and working on, like, that part's hard enough. And that totally resonated with me because it is. It's like once you decide to start figuring that stuff out for yourself, you'll immediately, well, if you're anything like me, you'll immediately be hit with something that makes you go, never mind, I'll start figuring this stuff out tomorrow. Like, this is too much. I don't want. So it, like, the universe will welcome you. It doesn't like welcome you with open arms into this journey of self-discovery. It's like, are you really ready? Are you sure? But I think it is ongoing because I mean, everything is like, if you're not kind of staying on top of what you enjoy and what feels good to you and what works, then you're going to suddenly wake up one day in 3 or 5 or 10 years and realize that you don't recognize your own life. And I've experienced that, you know. I don't talk about things I haven't experienced. So I think the question, when you think of staying in your lane, do you think of a swimming pool or the highway?
I think of a highway.
You do?
I do.
I always think of a swimming pool. And I just thought of that question. I was like, I wonder if everyone thinks of a swimming pool, which is so weird because
No.
I don't swim.
You don't, but have you ever?
I
Do
mean,
you?
not competitively. Oh my God.
Do you
That would
have your kids?
be yes, but not for eons of time. Like maybe for a summer, they tried out swim team or something, but it's not like I've spent my life poolside or anything. Thing like watching them, you know, go off the starting block or anyway.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Are you drawn to water?
Oh,
Are
I love
you?
water. Oh, yeah,
Well,
for
maybe
sure.
that's part of
Maybe
it.
that's it. I don't know. Yeah.
Huh.
Whenever someone says stay in your lane, I always picture a lap pool with the rope and the bubble, you know, the floating, right? In separate. That's what I always picture. I've actually, I don't think I've ever pictured a highway.
I picture like a 6 or 8 lane wide highway where like I'm in the car and there's all these people and I'm just like focusing
Yeah.
on me. I don't know, not
Just
looking.
I'm here,
Yeah,
right?
staying in
Don't
my
you think?
lane.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. When I think of staying in your lane, I think of control, like knowing what you can and can't control. And for me on my journey, I mean, I used to spend a ton of time like talking about what I thought other people should control, like, you know, and shooting over them when I didn't even know I was shooting over them because it was all about gossip, which was an effort for me to try to control, right? Especially if I'm focused on other people, then I don't have to focus on myself. But when I started to go down the rabbit hole of personal development, I quickly realized that really wasn't an advantageous use of my, of my time. And I also began to discover that I don't know my own flipping story. Like I haven't uncovered all of the reasons why, and I haven't like untucked all my crazy and rearranged it and chose what to keep and tuck back in. I mean, sometimes I can't even keep it tucked in. So why in the world would I spend time now thinking that I can know somebody else's story?
I know exactly why you would, by the way. And I think this is why, because I had to get over my own, it was almost like a guilty pleasure of offering unsolicited advice.
Oh.
Okay. And I think that if I look at me, the reason I did that is because it made me feel like I had a modicum of control over something and a modicum of value for someone.
Yeah.
Like I can help you with this. My life is a mess, but I can definitely tell you what you should do. I can't help you execute it. And I can't, you know, and I probably wouldn't do it, but I can tell you that you should, and then you're going to get excited. And then I'm going to feel validated and like I've created. So I think for me, that's what that comes back to. And I do really catch myself now. I will literally say to someone, this is totally unsolicited. This is a totally unsolicited comment. And if they say, zip it, I'll just zip it, you know? And if they say, go, then I'll go. But like, I'm very careful about, and I don't always hit the mark, but analyzing where that's coming from. Because to your point, like just even if I knew myself fully, which I don't, and I don't know that I ever will, I mean, but I get to know myself better and better each day, the type of a thing, right?
Right.
Even if I knew myself fully, that does not mean that I know anyone outside of me.
Right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so easy to believe the stories that we tell ourselves about everything that happens outside of us every day, all day. My daughter interviewed for a job at the coffee shop here in town, and they told her she had the job, and if they didn't call her on Friday, that they would call her yesterday, and she didn't get a phone call back. And so last night she came into my office and sat down, and she's like, okay, so maybe he just got really busy, or maybe they decided not to hire me, or maybe they don't like me anymore. And I'm like, okay, be careful of the story that you tell yourself. Like all you know is that you're on the stairs and you know for a fact that he didn't call you back.
That's and all you know.
Right. So you can choose what story you tell. You can take the stairs up and say, okay, I'm going to check in with him after school tomorrow. Done. End of story. Or you can take the stairs down. They probably don't like me. They must have changed their mind. I'm not a good fit. I must have done something stupid, and go down the rabbit hole. And I think it's really easy for us to tell ourselves stories about other people, even with them not being present, you know, and that doesn't serve us.
Well, and I think that's why when certain scenarios happen with people in the public eye, everyone jumps on top of them, on top of the issue, not on top of the person. Well, they do jump off on top of the person, like figuratively, but,
right.
But like, or metaphorically, but it's like we want a reason that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sense out of what the why of everything.
Right.
I really do think that's just our innate psychology.
I do too. Yeah.
And so what's interesting to me is how the majority of us are seemingly conditioned to make negative sense.
Right.
So your analogy to like go down the stairs instead of going up the stairs, to go down the elevator instead of going up the elevator, right, and thinking, well, maybe they had a busy day yesterday, or maybe they're trying to figure out how to offer me more money, or maybe we do the opposite. And, you know, when someone becomes very successful in the public eye, it's easy to say, and you see these in the comments, mm-hmm, whenever this happens, well, their parents were super wealthy. They're a trust fund thing. They, mm-hmm, knew this person. Their uncle is this person. They have six nannies, you know, whatever, mm-hmm, it is. Like we do that because it makes us feel better about the fact that we haven't reached that point. Mm-hmm. But it's really a huge waste of a lot of things, but our energy, our time, all of, yeah, it. Yeah,
absolutely. And again, it goes back to staying in your lane, mm-hmm, focusing on what you can control, you doing you. Other people aren't living their life at you. Mm-hmm. You know, this, mm-hmm, their life isn't about you. Glennon Doyle, in her first book, she wrote about how she was so happy. And I don't remember this word for word, so this is my best paraphrase.
Yeah.
She was so happy because she made it out of the house with her first child, and they went to the mall, and they had clothes on. They weren't even in their pajamas. And she was like so excited because she got out of the house and she got there safely, and the baby was in the stroller, and they both had clothes on. And so she's walking around the mall feeling like a normal person, you know, for the first time, like after you have kids, and I can relate to that. I remember those days. And she, it was getting towards lunchtime. And so she sat down in the food court and opened up her, you know, glass jar of baby food to feed the little one, and looked over, and there was like a mom and her daughter at about the same age. And the baby was like dressed exactly like the mom in pristine outfits. And the mom opened up a glass container, but not a store-bought, like homemade container of mashed avocado, and was, mm-hmm, feeding her baby. And immediately Glennon talks about how she felt less than, and then she realized that that mom wasn't, you know, momming at her. She wasn't doing that at her. And I mean, we get to make the meaning about everything. So if we're going to make up a story, regardless, why the hell not make it a good one?
You know, that story reminds me of many years ago. I mean, I can't even remember how many years ago, but it was a lot of years ago. I was in like a TJ Maxx or a Marshalls or something like that. And I didn't have any kids with me, so they must have been off at preschool. They were little. I do, mm-hmm, remember this. They were little or something. And there was this woman, and she was darling. And she had on the most, she was wearing Uggs and, you know, all the things, right? Mm-hmm. Like her hair was done and her makeup was perfect. And she had her baby, who was probably 10, 11 something months old, in the, mm-hmm, stroller, in, again, a $700 stroller at least, mm-hmm, bows in her hair. They had matching Uggs, like everything was pristine. Mm-hmm. And when I walked, she was wearing a shirt that was really cute. And so as I walked by her in the aisle, I said, I love your shirt. And she looked at me, and it was like she had never before been complimented. Like literally she lit up from the inside, mm, out. And she was like, thank you. Like, it gives me goosebumps to even remember it, because I honestly just expected her to be like, thanks. Like not rude or anything, but just, yeah, like, oh, thank you. Have a good day. But she lit up, hmm, and it made me realize that in that moment, like maybe this is the first day she's gotten out in 6 months, right, and she wanted to match her daughter. And she's just trying to like get out and get, yeah, home before all heck breaks loose, you know? And so I just, right, think you're right. Like nobody's doing what they're doing at somebody else. It's, mm-hmm, that's a great way to put that. I've not heard that before. They're just doing them. They're doing what they're doing. They're doing the best they can in most cases.
Right. Right. I mean, unless you're a psychopath, right? You don't wake up in the morning deciding that you're going to run around hurting people or making them feel less than. I mean, you don't do that.
Well, that's the thing is, it usually has nothing to do with it. Like, right, I'm sure that Glennon would have been, I don't know, surprised to learn that the other woman was feeling just as insecure, because, yeah, her friends were at the Grove. They weren't at this, right, this mall. all the things, you know, or whatever the case is.
Right, right. There's always, I mean, if we look around long enough, there's always a reason to feel less than. We can look for that or we can look for the other. But I do think that we have a predisposition to looking for the negative because, well, I think our brain is wired to keep us alive, right? I mean, if you read scientific studies, I'm doing air quotes for those of you that can't see, but and they really are scientific studies. I'm not sure why I feel the need to air quote it. I don't know, but they talk about how our primitive brain, you know, it's always scanning the perimeter for danger, 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 danger. And anything that is outside our norm is considered dangerous. And so when we do something outside our comfort zone or we see something that could be perceived as negative, I think our brain is wired because to help us see it that way, because to keep us safe, but it doesn't have to be
scratching the berserk out of the door.
No, go get, okay. You need to go.
No, if you can't hear it, I'm fine.
That's awesome.
You wanted to go out?
No, I want to hear it. Now I'm like trying to be quiet so I can hear it, but I
don't. Yeah, no, don't try. I'm trying hard enough to ignore it. You know what amazes me sometimes is how far we've evolved and yet how far we haven't.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a topic in a conversation in and of itself, but I think it's interesting that our primitive brain is still so heavily intact. Mm-hmm. I'm not a brain expert except, you know, through WebMD searches and the like, but it's interesting. I just think for many people, myself included at one point, it's a habit.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's a preventative measure because if you can like let yourself down slowly, then you can remove the final blow that you imagine is coming. Mm-hmm. So if you can start, like, it is a survival thing, mm-hmm. because if you can start preparing yourself mentally for something to not work out, then when it doesn't, you won't be all that surprised or disappointed.
Right. I mean, that's at least what we tell ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, then we're just looking for disappointment. Like we're looking for the other shoe to drop when the reality is, like, I have a coach that says, we're the other shoe. You are the shoe.
Say that. You are the other shoe.
Yeah. You are the shoe. And because you get to determine how you look at everything and the meaning that you make of everything. And so, but unless you realize that and you catch on that you're doing it, you know, you'll blame it on karma or fate or your bad luck, or that's just how things are. And I did just do air quotes there. But
no, but it's because it's so hard to take personal responsibility. It's so much easier to be like, you know, if only this person would have done this differently, then I would have done this differently. And then everything would be different. Right. That is easy because that takes all the onus off of ourselves and puts it on someone else. But it's hard to kind of go, what's my part in this? Because if you're engaged in any way, shape, or form in an experience, then you have a part in it. Now, I want to be very clear, like, aside from, you know, abuse, right? And things of that nature.
Right.
But I'm just saying, if we take it down to a lesser degree, like, what's my part in this? Where's the opportunity here? Mm-hmm. Everything has an opportunity.
Absolutely. You can learn from everything that happens. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's always, I don't want to say a silver lining because that's a bunch of crap, I think,
too. You
know
what? I don't like to do that either because it makes it sound like I'm Pollyanna-ing everything. Right. That's a verb I made up. So you can Pollyanna things, I've decided.
Yes.
I just decided that right now. But it makes it seem like I'm you know, to be like, well, where's the silver lining? But because bad things do happen. And you know what? A lot of times they suck.
Right. And it's okay to feel that way. Yeah.
And I think at the end, though, you can choose to say, where is there an opportunity here? And if you decide to say there isn't one, like, that's okay, as provided you aren't doing that for everything. Mm-hmm. Because I used to do it for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no opportunity. This just sucks. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, then you're the victim.
Oh, yeah.
But totally the victim. And I've been there. I've been there too, you know, and when I work with clients and I have people, a common thing I hear from women clients that I work with is if my spouse were just more supportive, you know, then X, Y, Z.
But you know, in all seriousness, I hear that all the time. And I understand. Yeah. I was married and I get it. And I mean, you know, I don't think I ever actually said if David were more support, because David was very, very supportive. That's another whole conversation different from this, but I get it. Like, yeah, if my spouse were more supportive, if I didn't have so many kids, if it weren't so bleeping hot outside in Phoenix, right. July, you know, whatever it is.
Right. If I were younger.
If I were older.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So as you're going about your life, then what helps you be able to stay in your lane and not fall into that trap of trying to control everything, which, by the way, I know you know this, but blame is just another way that we try to control, right? Where it's just another type of control that we're trying to have. So what helps you stay in your lane?
I believe that I've gotten to a point where I'm the most honest with myself that I've ever been. So mm-hmm. I'm the most honestly and respectfully self-aware as I've ever been. And I hope to only continue to increase that. So sometimes I just take a minute and it's like, you know, something, for example, something really, really riled me up this morning. And I was riled up and I was good. And then I was like, what is this really about?
Mm.
I think I had to get to the point where I was willing to go, what is this really about? Because I do subscribe to the theory or the principle or whatever you want to call it, that everything's a mirror.
Absolutely.
You know, everyone's a mirror, and so it's like, what is this trying, you know, every once in a while, it's trying to show me that I just shouldn't work with a certain person or I shouldn't go to a certain store or whatever it is, right? But more often than not, it's like, what is this showing me? Like, why is this really bothering me? What is it making me feel about myself that's a trigger for me? Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, 9.32 times out of 10, because it's more than 9, but less than 10, I can come up with something. And it's usually something along the lines of my triggers, which are like not feeling appreciated or not feeling seen or, well, those are two really big ones for mm-hmm. me. And those are almost, if you want to talk about like the prehistoric brain, that's Liz's prehistoric brain. Like that's the brain that I've had for the majority of my years on this earth. And we don't have to say how many years those are, but you know, that brain of victim and oh, woe is me. And this person did this to me. Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting equally tired of, it didn't happen to me. It happened for me. Because I think, okay, I get it. And I agree with it 100%. The challenge is that there were years, Bethany, that I heard that phrase and didn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
If you're just going to take these phrases as phrases
mm-hmm.
and run around and go, this isn't happening to me. It's happening for me. Everything's happening for me. But you don't take a moment to like go under it and go, why is it happening for me? What am I supposed to learn? Then there's no forward momentum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a great starting point. This is happening for me. That's a great starting point. Or what's the opportunity? There's an opportunity here. That's a great starting point. So for me, with 5 kids and 3, you know, I have had kids underfoot for 21 years. And now with 3, I didn't have any time to think about who I was or what I wanted or what I liked or like what's in the cupboard or anything. Do I like peanut M&Ms? I don't know. But now with 3 of them off at college, I feel like an empty nester and I've still got 2 here because it's, you know, it's so 2 is less than 5.
Right.
I have more time to do those things. And to be honest, I actually learn a lot of it from my kids because I listen. I mean, they're some of my biggest teachers. I hope they don't listen to this episode. One of them in particular will use this against me until the end of time. But, you know, they'll say things like, you seem a little stressed today. Uh-huh. You know, or, and the old me, meaning 10, 15 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, I'm stressed because you won't clean your room and you da-da-da-da and this happened and you're not doing it. But now I can kind of absorb it and be like, you know what? I am a little stressed. And thank you for noticing that. And also, it would really help me out if you could clean your room type of, you know, mm-hmm. And then they do or don't. And I won't say which one it is. But the point is that you have to be willing to see what's being given back to you.
Right. Absolutely. Boy, as you're talking about that conversation with kids, mine do that to me too. I've had my son say, Mom, you seem really, really upset. What's the story you're telling yourself? I'm like, ooh. Oh.
Yeah. And then you're like, why did I ever teach them this?
Why? But, oh.
That's for me to say to you, my child. That's not for you to say to me. Okay.
And immediately it does make me pause.
Right.
It does. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Like I'm equally irritated and proud at the same time.
Like, right. Like, do as I say, but don't say as I say. Very different things. I have a similar thing. You know, one of my sons will often say to me, Mom, the way you're handling this isn't working for me. And I don't even know what to do with that besides pause. I mean, like what?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if he learned that from me, to be honest, because it feels real foreign. I feel like, but I'm sure there have been times when I've been like, this is not working for me, you know? And so for him to say, the way you're handling this is not working for me. And then we end up in a dialogue.
Sure.
You know, because it's not just about what works for me. It's about what works for, like, this is why that's the whole reason I wrote Enough, because there was so much of this, you should do this and you should do that. And every mom should be doing this and mom shouldn't be doing that. And you should be wearing this and forget this yoga pant brand. And if you wear this yoga, these yoga pants, you're this. And if you wear these, you're that. It was so much that I was like, we're never going to collectively agree.
Right.
Like all the women of the world are never going to collectively, nor, by the way, how boring would that be if we did? But we're never all going to collectively agree on and pick a topic.
Right.
So where do I stand? You know, instead of like hearing everybody else tell me, either tell me directly, Liz, you should believe this, or hear them say generally, women should believe this, or people should believe this, or whatever the case was. Mm-hmm. And me going, oh, okay. All right. I mean, that sort of feels okay. I'd be like, what do I feel that I should, what do I believe? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you come at your life and your business from that space, my God, does it make life easier? Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing to defend. And you know, one of my very first coaches, Julian Rosen, who I just adore to the moon and back, would always say this phrase to me. And I know he would say this isn't his, but he is the first person from whom I heard it. Nothing to hide, nothing to prove. Mm. He'd always say, nothing to hide, nothing to prove. Mm-hmm. And that's just how I doesn't get more simple than that. But you can't hide anything from yourself either. And you can't be trying to prove, like I'm trying to prove things to myself. I'm very competitive with myself, but I'm not trying to prove that I have value. You know, there might be a day when I feel like I start to feel a lack of value and then I have to look at that. Like, you know what I mean? But inherently I know. And I don't, if I'm hiding something from someone else, then I have to look at that too, because is it that I don't want to acknowledge it. I don't want to admit it. I'm ashamed of it. I don't want to believe it to be true. That doesn't mean, by the way, that I have to then go admit it or acknowledge it publicly.
Right.
It's just, what are you hiding and why?
Right. Right. Diving in to that. I mean, truly getting real with yourself about why you do what you do. I don't know that there's anything I don't know that there's any path to really feeling enough other than going through all your stuff. I mean, walking through it.
Yeah. And that alone just makes people go, ugh. And I get it. Right. Like it's like, I have enough to do today. Have you like, there's 7 loads of laundry that have just been left in the laundry room in a basket. Like, so when will I find time to go? But at some point I had to admit to myself that I was just using all that as, it wasn't that it wasn't justifiable. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's always going to be a lot going on in my life. I do get to choose some things though, you know, and mm-hmm. I do get to prioritize. I get to choose what to prioritize. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes when I still today hear myself making those excuses, it's like, is that an excuse? Is that justifiable, Elizabeth? Or are you just procrastinating because this feels icky? You don't want to look at this. And more often than not, that's what it is.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree. Because I think we truly make time for what is really important to us, at least in the moment. You know, years ago when I first left corporate, I had a friend that was doing a Facebook group, and she was talking about time and priorities, and she had me do a time study for 3 days and write down what I did every 15 minutes and then segment my time into percentages. Now, mm-hmm. I didn't see this coming, but this was like a throat punch, and then had me list out my priorities and compare it to how I spent my time. And I was like in a ball on the floor crying, literally, because I was lying to myself. I was lying to myself. Truly, if I really felt like those top 3 priorities were really important to me, I'd be living them out. So, you know, I don't even know how you can stay in your own lane, so to speak, if you're not being true to yourself.
And that might be, because I know you do a lot of values work with your clients, and mm-hmm. that might be one of the hardest parts of the process, is getting really honest about what your values are, not what you think they should be. So for example, lots of times, specifically dads, and I see it with dads because they're often, and this, I'm making a general statement. So I know I'm doing a stereotypical thing here, but I've just seen it. Because they're away at work, right? So they're off site, not right now, but you know, they're off at work, they're traveling, mm-hmm. they're doing their thing. And so when you talk to them about their values, they'll say, my family is my number one value. We get to the weekends and they're in front of the football game with their buddies or the neighbor. And not that there's anything wrong with that, right? But their wife or their children or both are off doing something else. Now, I'm taking that in isolation. So I'm not saying to anybody listening that if you choose to watch football, you're a bad father or you're living outside of your values. That's not it. It's more of the pattern that you have to look for. So I did values work years ago, and I was equally surprised because the things that I said were my values, my children, my all the things that, you know, that's what it was. It was like off the top of my head what I had been sort of programmed. But then when I looked at where I was spending my time and how I was spending my time, I thought, these aren't in alignment. Like they don't match. So no wonder I feel so disconnected mm-hmm. from myself, because I'm not, you know, you're saying like the old adage, you're saying one thing, but your actions say another thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy.
And by the way, it's okay. And I have to tell people this, like I don't do what you do, right? I'm not anywhere near as competent at this as you are. But when we start, like when I have conversations with my friends about values, it's okay if your number one value is money. Okay if your number one value is like personal care.
Right.
So I think that's part of the other problem, is that there's a shame that comes along with people who like legitimately say, my number one value is money, but I shouldn't say that.
Right. And I was just going to say, as I look back at my journey, I think a big part of it was accepting truth about what I really wanted, what I valued, and taking that a step further, what does that look like? So like, if my number one value is money, what does that look like? Does that look like 5 homes? Does it look like, I mean, you know, so what does that mean for you? Because it may mean one thing for you and another thing for another person, but you've got to get past the whole feeling of what should and shouldn't be. You know, it's okay to be you. It's okay to define what that is for you. I mean, nobody else is walking your shoes. Nobody else is going to live your life. Nobody else is going to die. I mean, with you, you know, you're you come in alone, you go out alone. I'm not trying to be like negative, but
I'm gonna die alone. That's what I heard. Just heard you say.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, good talk. All right, next episode.
Right. You know, I remember again many years ago. It feels like everything is either pre-children or now. We've got a 21-year span, but it was many years ago, and I was in Vegas for something. I'm not a huge Vegas like person because I don't understand any of the games and the roulette I don't even know the names of things. The what do you call the slots are my thing, but now you can't pull that. Now you really can't post COVID, but even within the last couple of years, you can't pull the handle. I really wanted to pull the handle. I don't want to push the darn button. But anyway, I was there and I think I was there for a convention actually. And I was walking through the casino and it was the afternoon. It was the middle of the afternoon. And I saw the high roller salon, if you will. And I don't remember if, I think they were playing blackjack. Mm-hmm. And the table minimum was $10,000. Mm-hmm. I remember vividly walking past and looking at that and thinking with not with judgment per se, but looking at the individuals who were sitting at the table mm-hmm. playing and thinking, they can literally lose $10,000. It's no big deal. They see $10,000 like I see $1.
Yeah.
And I think that somebody I was with at the time was like at the event was very triggered by this reality. Mm. Because it was like, there are children starving in the world. You know, you're losing $10,000. And I think that's where a lot of the shame comes from. So again, what I said to this person loosely was, because I didn't know the person very well. You know, when you get to the point that you have that level of disposable income, you do with it. Here's what the lesson or the message is that when you have that level of disposable income, you're not going to go into the $10,000 a hand salon. You're going to go do something else with it. But everyone gets to decide. So you can't judge that guy.
Right.
It's just, you just say, and it was a table full of men. I'm always looking for like the tables that are full of women playing $10,000 hands. Like where I have yet to see one, but maybe I just don't go to Vegas enough. I don't know. You don't get to, instead of judging it, use it as an opportunity to say, that's not what I want.
Right.
When I get to that point, yes. Here's how I'm going to do things.
Yes. So when I work with my clients, we talk about this in terms of like, instead of judging, it's discernment.
Exactly.
Right. Because judgment is all about you're wrong, you're bad, you're this, you should or shouldn't. But discernment is this right for me or not right for me? And that's where it ends. Like, and that's so much lighter and more beautiful and more productive. And it's such a better way.
The energy of it is so, it's empowering. You're not disempowering another person. You're empowering yourself by saying, you know, and so back in the day, and by back in the day, I mean like, you know, 5 months ago when everyone, when the big trend was like to post in front of your rented Maserati or find the setup, the set lot where they have a half an airplane and you sit in it, you take your picture, whatever. When that was the big trend on social media, I mean, I wasn't so much saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you would want people to think you have a Maserati. I was thinking, I really don't like that car. Like, no offense to Maserati, but I mean, you know, for me, it made me think it, instead of going like, why would they, and going down this whole path about selfishness and greed, right, and da, 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 right. I was like, what do I want to drive? You know? So when I'm making however much per year that I could technically buy a Maserati, what do I want to buy? Mm-hmm. You know? And I mean, it's, the answer doesn't even matter. The point right. is, it's that discernment that right. you, that, and that, by the way, fuels me, as opposed to the opposite energy of judgment and,
right.
and, like disempowering people, which actually makes me like, want to go and I don't know. It's not, it doesn't make me want to go and do anything like happy.
Right.
Like, I want to go yeah. eat like a whole cake by myself. Right.
Or drink a bottle of wine or.
Yeah. 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 Which, I mean, both of which can make one happy, but I'm just, you know, it's like, it doesn't, when you can get excited about your own dream, and that's the other thing, Bethany, is that the discernment lets you get into a space where, well, and again, I'm speaking for myself. It's made me forget the vision board. Like that is how I make my vision board mm-hmm. is through that level of discernment. And when I say forget the vision board, I only mean like going through magazines, and everyone does a vision board differently. So this is not me condemning anyone who goes through magazines and just tears things. This is me saying like my vision board is more up here and I'm pointing to my brain mm-hmm. than it is on my wall. Because in those moments I go, oh, that's the car I want. Or, oh, I want to travel to this place
yeah.
or I want to buy a house here or,
right.
you know, and so, or I don't want, I mean, I hope an executive from Uggs doesn't hear this, but it did also cause me to say, I don't want to pay $110 for Ugg boots because I don't personally, they're not Liz, but kudos to everyone else. Well, who,
right.
So it's not like just all the shoulding and all of the hustle culture, pressure.
So much pressure.
You know, you've got to be able to turn, we all have to find a way to turn that off for ourselves, because it will drive, it could very easily drive you insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's driven me to feel more anxious than I needed to
mm-hmm.
feel, you know, less credible than I, like the whole thing. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. nothing good comes from it. So.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Boy, there's an entire course inside this conversation. Seriously. Good. Like as we're talking, I have five steps to stay in your lane from our conversation. So I'm going to run through them quickly, and then I'll ask you if you have anything else you want to add. And of course, then we have to know where to find your book, which I know because I have it and it's amazing. and then how people can connect with you. So here's what I took away. And these are in no particular order necessarily from our discussion. So steps to stay in your lane. Step one, know that there's power in the pause. Stopping to ask yourself why when you're being triggered or why you're doing what you're doing when you're in a high emotional state. Number two, know what you can and can't control. Number three, reminder, people are not living their life at you.
Yes.
Number four, know what you believe and what you want, with emphasis on the you, for real, not what you were told to want or taught to want or what you think you should want. It's interesting that you talked about this, because when I do values work with basically everyone that I serve, we talk about different areas of values. And one of those areas is personal values. And I really have to hit home that when you're looking at your personal values, this is you without titles. It's you without, you know, without feeling the shoulds. It's you stripped away, just you. And it takes a conscious effort to do that, because your automatic shoulds and your titles and all those things creep in really easily. So yeah, what getting to the guts really of what you really want. And then the last one is using discernment versus judgment. But I love it. I love it. Good talking points. Anything else that you want to add?
Gosh, I can't think of anything. I just think that we have gotten so comfortable feeling like we need to fit in that we're afraid. Well, this is going to sound so cliche and like I created it, but that we're afraid to stand out. But yeah. I just think, you know, it's like we tend to ask like, well, what's everyone else doing, as opposed to asking, well, what do I want to do? You right. know, and I catch myself in this a lot, like with the publishing house. I am very up on what other publishing houses, what other independents are doing, what traditionals are doing, what, you know, this, that, or the other thing. And sometimes I catch myself feeling like I have to put myself, it's like, which one of these boxes do I want to put mm-hmm. myself in? And then I say, well, Elizabeth, why can't you just create your own box?
Yes.
You know, why can't you just like, there's nothing, why not? Right. And so I think that people, and then you have to own it.
Yeah.
And then you have to get confident in it enough to own it. And when people yeah. challenge you on it, because they will,
right.
You know, why would you do it this way? I just had this happen last week. Somebody said, why wouldn't you do this in this other way? And I knew exactly why. I had given it great thought. So whether or not this person agreed with me wasn't the point. The point was, and there were other questions that were asked, well, why don't you do it this way? And I thought, well, I haven't thought about that. So I'm going to go think about that.
Yeah.
But I want to have an answer. It's not just, well, because no one does it that way. It's because this doesn't make sense to me, and here's why.
Right. And I don't know about you, but sometimes for me, as I've been on this growth journey, it's simply getting quiet and listening to how I feel about it. Like there's just an inner knowing. If I just trust myself, like, okay, no, it isn't in alignment with me to do 75 reels and 47 posts on Instagram every week, no matter who the hell says that I should do that. Like, that's not.
You told me once on a Voxer, you said, well, I think the prevailing wisdom right now is 4 to 7 a week. And I was like,
yes,
what?
It is.
Like, I haven't done 4 in a lifetime. Like, what?
I know.
So, exactly. Yeah.
I know. And then I started feeling all pressurized about that. Like, how am I going to get this done? Where does this fit in my, okay, wait a minute. First of all, how does this feel for me? Let's just start there. Like, never mind what they say. Like, how does this feel for me? And like, what if we just, if there's nothing else you take away from this whole episode, like just start thinking about how it feels for you.
If you were on an island by yourself, what would you think? Right. So,
That's a brilliant way to say it. Yeah.
You know, this is better for things that are like, you can see with the eye, for example. So if someone's trying to decide, well, should I get the black yoga pants? Everything comes back to yoga pants in my world. Should I get the black yoga pants or should I get the purple camo yoga pants? Like if we forget how heavily we are subconsciously influenced by what we think other people are going to think.
Yes.
So the question is, if you were going to an island and you could take one of these pair of yoga pants and no one was going to see you, it was you and you and whatever, like snakes and lizards pop out. That's it. Which would you take? And what's surprising to me is sometimes I'm like, neither. Like I'm sick of yoga pants. It's hot. You know, I just, whatever. But when it comes to the people where I've used this question most is with people who are considering new tattoos or piercings mm-hmm. or like a new haircut. Like, should I go purple? Should I do this mermaid look? I think mm-hmm. that's out. Like, I don't think we're doing that anymore. But that's always my question, because I think it helps you to get clear about how you feel apart and aside from how anyone else might feel.
And it's so contrary to everything that we're taught. I think that's the most important thing that we can do in our life, is go inward and figure out what it is that we want. But we're taught exactly the opposite of that our whole lives. you know, and growing up as children, obviously you have to conform because that's how you get fed and you are safe and you're kept alive. Even if it's highly dysfunctional, you know, you have to do that. And I get that, but as adults, our responsibility is to figure out, you know, who we are, what we want, and then get after it. And
well, I mean, thank heavens for like Google and YouTube videos.
Yes.
And like, the amount of research, like, thank God I don't have to go to my parents' 26 volume Encyclopedia Britannica anymore to learn about, right? But at the same time, like, you have to know what, so it's even in book publishing, right? You can Google how to publish a book and you're going to come up with 300 pages of answers. Some are wrong, but for the most part, they're all fine. It's just a question of which one feels right to you.
Right.
So if you're out there looking for like, what's the best, you can even Google best way to publish a book mm-hmm. and you're going to get 25 pages of answers. Right. So that is critical.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like there should be a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, a sixth one, a sixth step that says what feels right to you.
Yeah. It really is though. Like we talk about this a lot, you and I and people in both of our, you know, circles and stuff about the feeling thing. And a lot of people, you're either in the feeling camp or you're not yet. And I say yet because I think a lot of people end up coming over, right? Yeah. But like, it feels a little woo-woo at first. Right. Like, what do you feel? How does that feel to you? But there's like, you got to trust those feelings. If something feels off, something is off. It doesn't mean you're about to lose your life. It just means something isn't
right.
It may be that you're off. It may be that like your anxiety is too high or you're being paranoid. Right. What? I don't know. We can, again, whole other show and not for me to speak to, but the feeling thing is so important.
It's a big deal. I had that happen today. So we were looking for a jet boat. And we went to see one yesterday and it wasn't what we wanted. And we drove like almost 2 hours to go see it. And so we like put our heads down and came home. And then we got home and there was another one listed and it was like an hour and a half, like south of a different direction. Okay. So I'm like, for whatever reason, I'm the person that negotiates everything. Like Tom will be like, okay, ask him this and ask him that kind of engine and whatever. And so I do all the conversing. And I asked the woman what condition the seats were in on this boat and if there were any cracks or dents in the hull. And mm-hmm. and she came back and she said, there's no tears in the seats and the hull is in good condition. There's one small dent in the front, but there's no cracks. There's no leaking inside the hull. And, I'm like, okay. And then I thought I need to ask her if there's like small tears or weather checking on the seats. And I didn't because it sounded so good that I wanted the boat, right? Yes. I wanted the boat. And we've been looking. I mean, yeah, we looked last fall, we've been looking this spring and we want a boat. And so my husband traipses down there. Guess what?
Yep.
The seats are crap, right? They're cracked. So one person's version of the seats are good is not necessarily our version. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I should have listened. I should have listened to my gut, my knowing, my feeling, my intuition, whatever you want to call it, that inner voice. I should have listened to that and asked that question, but instead I didn't. And now here, he spent 3 hours on the road today and I feel bad. I haven't even told him that I may have to wait a little bit. So he's not angry with me because I should have listened to my knowing. And,
well, it's like, we feel like we can influence a situation to be what we want it to be by like sinking a little bit and like not listening.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was like,
it's
that
the
was
the opposite, I guess, of overthinking. It's underthinking and it's probably a problem, but again, that's a whole book.
Yeah. Underthinking.
Don't underthink it.
Right.
God, that's a lot.
Oh, that's a whole other episode in itself too. Underthinking. Yeah. I don't know. I think those nudges and those whispers and whatever, those feelings, I think that's highly important. And we did it last night too. And I know we're trying to wrap up here and we just keep going, but when we went to see the other boat, both of us questioned if it was going to be okay, if it was right. And there was another boat that was nearby that we kept trying to get a hold of the owner on, and he never did respond. And I think both of us hoped that if that one didn't work out, that the owner would, you know, get the other owner would get a hold of us and we'd be able to go see it too, since we were all the way across wherever we were. But, and on the way home, we were like, we shouldn't have went. Like we were forcing that too. It's like, okay, how much gas and time and money are we going to have bend before we really start listening to the knowing, you know, or whatever that you want to call that. But it's incredible. But there's so much power that we have inside of us to know what our next steps are at any given moment. And it's right there next to our self-worth and feeling enough and all of that, right? It's all there.
For sure. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of feeling enough, I have to tell you, I'm a bookmarker. Like I'll tear the pages and turn the corners and make notes in the back. And your book, and well, enough, because I need to clarify, because you have more than one book, right? But enough for me, it's one of my most written in.
Really?
Books. Yeah. I have so many marks in it. I have now I have like extra pages, like pieces of paper inserted with notes.
Oh, I love that.
Because I ran out of room, like marking in the back. And it's good. It's good. There's a lot of questions in the book that you have phrased in ways that I haven't heard people like you made me think differently. And I really appreciate that. Not to mention it's hilarious, like knitting a car. Oh my gosh. Like knitting a car.
Yeah, I didn't really knit a car.
But I know, but it's like I was choking on my coffee in the airplane. Like that is so funny.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it. It was really fun to write, for sure.
And it's so true. It's real and relatable and down to earth, and honestly, has made me think differently and not feel so alone in my entrepreneurial journey. Good. You know, like just sometimes we just need to know we're just not alone.
And that's why I do what I do with, you know, to help people write books, because there's always going to be someone out there who's like, am I the only one? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
So telling your story is super powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. So how can people find Enough, and how can they find you? What's the best place to catch up with you?
So Enough and all the other book, everything's available on Amazon, is probably the best place. My website, elizabethlyons.com, is probably the best place to find me where you want to find me. I'm most often, Instagram is my platform of choice. Secondly, would probably be Facebook, but I'm pretty heavily an Instagram girl right now, but all the links are on my elizabethlyons.com site. So
perfect.
Best place to go.
Excellent. I'll put all of this in the show notes, listeners, so you have access to it, along with the steps for staying in your lane. So if you're driving or walking or, God forbid, running, whatever, there's people that do that, not running from a bear, running for fun, then you can come back to the show notes and get this. So thank you so much for being here today, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been so fun. Listeners, thank you for being here. I know you have a lot of choices as to where you could spend your time. And as always, I appreciate you being here with us. Know someone that would appreciate this episode, share it. Together, we lift each other and we are all better together. So until next time, take action, live big, and stay dialed in.